Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for the new GTLD update webinar. I'm Michelle Jordan, manager of new GTLD communications for ICANN, and I'm going to go over a few quick things before we get started. First of all, I'd like to apologize for the time mix-up on the start time for the webinar. Due to daylight savings time, the webinar start time that was posted on the site got a little mixed up, and as soon as we realized this, we adjusted it and stayed with the UTC posted time, so we adjusted the PDT time. As a reminder, this webinar is being recorded. Playback and the presentation will be available on the webinar page of the new GTLD microsite shortly after the conclusion of the session. We will have a question and answer session at the end of the presentation. You may ask questions by phone or through Adobe Connect. Phone questions will be given priority, and questions submitted online will be answered as time permits. The numbers to dial in are listed on the slide, and international numbers can be found on the webinar page. Once dialed in to the phone queue, dial star 1 to get in the queue or star 2 to drop out. If you experience any issues with Adobe Connect, such as audio or visual problems, please let us know through the questions and comments pod. And a quick reminder about the questions and comments pod, you will only be able to see the information that you put in there. You will not be able to see what anyone else submits. Now I'll quickly go through the agenda, and then we'll get started. First of all, Christine Ouellette, Vice President, GTLD Operations, will give you an update on the overall program. She'll go through the new GTLD program timeline, provide an update on initial evaluation, post-evaluation processes, rights protection mechanisms, and take a look at the GTLD sessions we have planned in Beijing. Second of all, Jeff Moss, ICANN's Chief Security Officer, will provide an update on security, stability, and resiliency efforts in support of the new GTLD program. And last but certainly not least, ICANN's President and CEO, Fadi Shahadi, we'll talk to you about the registry agreement and registrar accreditation agreement. We've got a lot of material to cover, so now I'll turn it over to Christine Ouellette.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good evening. Good morning to some. Thank you for joining us today. This is a pretty exciting webinar for us. I know this has been heralded as the pre-Beijing update webinar, but I think of it as the initial evaluation results announcement webinar. So we're still very excited about our accomplishment. This week, we start today by looking at our timeline. And to kind of level set as to where we are and what we have ahead of us. So as you know, we are still in the process of issuing clarifying questions to applicants through the initial evaluation process. We are in the midst of the pre-delegation testing pilot. And as of Friday, we have published our first batch of initial evaluation results. We published results for the first 27 out of the first 30 prioritized applications. And today is another momentous milestone achieved for the program, which is the launch of the Trademark Clearinghouse Verification Service. So that went live today, and as I understand it, we have already received registrations, user registrations, marks have been submitted and completed verification. So it's been a very successful day. As we look ahead, we're looking forward to the Beijing meeting coming up, and we're anticipating GAP advice either at or shortly thereafter the Beijing meeting. In April, we're looking mid-April to announce the all of the objections which have been submitted and verified through the dispute resolution process. And then looking ahead, you see the contract acceptance timeline beginning April 15th, contract signing starting on April 23rd, and then right thereafter, once we look the next week following contract signing, to begin pre-delegation testing. And you see here this, we've added a date here for the Sunrise and Claims systems under the Trademark Clearinghouse to be available by the end of June. So that's a few updates to the timeline this month. And as I already noted, the team here was very excited to be able to release and publish results for 27 of the first 30 prioritized applications last Friday. The three applications, however, we did hold back results on. We did not release initial evaluation results. We anticipate doing this on a go-forward basis. There may be a handful of applications from week to week for which initial evaluation is not completed for one of various reasons. Possible reasons why we may hold up issuing initial evaluation results in the given scheduled window, if you will, include pending change requests, clarifying questions which are still outstanding or being the results of which is evaluated, or because we're following up with applicants to collect missing information from the applications. So for those of you who saw some of the published reports, you'll recognize that there were three possible results of the initial evaluation. An application could have passed initial evaluation. It could be identified, we didn't see this past week, but it could be identified as eligible for extended evaluation, or it could be determined to be ineligible for further review, meaning it did not pass one of the panels that we do not have extended evaluation for, such as DNS or string similarity, or the geographic names panel. So we don't have, fortunately last week, all 27 applications were of the past status. So that's the reports that you've seen out there so far. So here on this page, you'll see what the a report for an initial evaluation report looks like. When an application is recommended for extended evaluation, there will be more detailed information provided to the applicant to specify the questions that they did not receive maximum scores for. The initial evaluation reports for the that are provided to the applicant via the TAS system are effectively the same as the initial evaluation reports provided and published publicly, with the exception of the confidential information that is part of questions 30 through 50. So those portions of the results and CQs and details about the IE results are omitted from the public of the IE results report. And then here you see on the microsite the link to the where you can find the list of IE reports. If you sort by priority order and you go all the way, scroll all the way to the right, then you'll be able to find the link to allow you to click and drill down and open one of the each of the IE results reports. Part of our process, as we've worked in the last several months to finalize initial evaluation results, was for us to, the ICANN team to compile the results from each of the initial evaluation panels. And we needed to compile these results and review them before we were able to synthesize and generate the final report for each application. What we found were that some applications had a situation where there was some missing information. And in those instances, we have decided to pursue what we're calling an outreach effort. So we are contacting the applicant to request this missing application information. We started off in a rather ad hoc manner, but we're trying to standardize the process so you can anticipate receiving, if your application is missing some information, you can anticipate receiving a notice through the customer service center and an email requesting this missing information. You'll be given the opportunity to schedule a call with the new GTLD team to discuss the request for this information. And what we're asking is for applicants to submit this information in these cases within 1 week. So if you choose not to submit additional information or take no action on these requests, then ICANN will be finalizing the results for initial evaluation as the application currently stands and publishing the results with the currently available information. If this additional information introduces new issues or causes inconsistency in the evaluation or doesn't meet the applicant guidebook requirements, then the application will be scored through initial evaluation accordingly, and no further outreach or follow-up will be conducted. But we really felt that this was an important step to perform before we finalized initial evaluation results. So now on to the current progress for initial evaluation. Here you see background screening, string similarity in the panel. You see 27 in the far right column, i.e. results published. That's such a good thing. You'll see if you compare this slide to the matrix from previous webinars, we're making consistent progress. Every week, every month, we are moving more applications through the pipeline through every panel. So these numbers are definitely going to move in the right direction, and we're confident that we're going to be able to keep this pace up, releasing results for the first 30 applications last week. We anticipate releasing results for those applications that are ready out of the next 30 this week, and so on as we go forward. I do want to note we have received several additional application withdrawals in the last week. So we're up to 33 total application withdrawals, which have been confirmed with applicants. That brings us to 1,897 active applications to the process. So as we release initial evaluation results, applicants with these passing evaluations become eligible for contracting. If the application has passed initial evaluation, if the application has no pending objections or GAC advice, and if the string is not in string contention. So we'll still be waiting a few more weeks after the Beijing meeting to determine if we receive GAC advice. But for applications that don't have objections or string contention, they could potentially proceed into contracting after the Beijing meeting. So applicants will be notified formally that they're ready to begin the contracting process. They'll get an information request. We'll be looking to get an updated continuing operations instrument, letter of credit. Document will also be asking for contact information, legal contact information, understanding that that could be different than our previously identified primary and secondary contacts. We'll be asking for a declaration regarding cross-ownership. And then we'll begin the process by asking the applicant to indicate whether they intend to accept the standard registry agreement or if they're going to pursue negotiation. We anticipate that applicants that choose to accept the standard registry agreement will be able to move through the process more rapidly, and applicants that negotiate are going to take more time to process. We're looking for applicants to be notified of eligibility as early as April 15th, pending the receipt of GAC advice. Moving on to the next phase of the program, pre-delegation testing. Wanted to give you an update on the pilot. We received volunteers, over 140 applications, volunteers, 80 different applicant entities, representing 12 different registry service providers. So in order to get the most coverage, I know we had previously said that we were going to select 5 participants for the pilot, but we have opted to get the most coverage across all registry service providers to make get the most value out of the pilot and be most prepared for the operational phase of pre-delegation testing. We opted to select 1 applicant from each of the 12 registry service providers. And those are the applications that are listed here. So we commenced the pre-delegation PDT pilot on the 13th of March, and we're anticipating wrapping that up by the 5th of April. Part of one of the first steps we asked the volunteers to perform was to input some data, to do some data entry work for us into the interface. We're in the process, work is complete. We're in the process of reviewing that data and beginning testing. And then the intention is to capture learned and update testing documentation and specifications as needed and incorporate those into the operational version of the pre-delegation testing system. So the pre-delegation test specifications were published on the 20th of March. Here you see a variety of things that we've published, materials that have been provided. Instructions and templates for data input were updated on the 15th of March. The user guide is anticipated to be published by the 17th of April, although I'm pushing to make that sooner rather than later. And we anticipate publishing all of the PDT materials based on our learnings from the pilot by April 17th at the latest. We are going to have a pre-delegation testing session in Beijing focused on helping applicants to prepare for participating in pre-delegation testing. So look for that if you are able to join us in Beijing. So here we have some statistics on our customer service center. When I saw these statistics, this is just for the month of March to date, I was shocked to see we had created over 1,400 cases. This is both internal and external cases, not just cases submitted and generated by the community, but also cases we're generating in-house. So we're seeing a spike of activity, primarily because we are moving towards the end of initial evaluation. The objection window closing, what is it now, a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago, also generated a spike in the number of cases that were initiated. You can see in the pie chart, bottom right, that 34% of the cases were regarding objections. So these are the trends. Again, we continue to monitor the cases progress for through the customer service center. Trademark Clearinghouse. As I said, it was a very big day, positive day for the launch of the TMCH. I watched the countdown clock click to zero this morning, and the web page update for Go Live. So Deloitte and the team there deserve a lot of credit to get that system up and running. We're very pleased to be partnering with them on this. As you see, we have a few key dates here. The memo on the straw man was published last week on March 20th. The verification service launched today, and we're anticipating publishing the non-technical requirements for registries as anticipated in Step 7 by March 29th, and that is that's this Friday. Already. And there will be more discussion, and we do also have a session on the Trademark Clearinghouse in Beijing, which I'll summarize all of our Beijing sessions at the end of the presentation. Objections and dispute resolution. So these are preliminary numbers. I'm sure somebody's going to go tweet it out there. Because not all of this is quite readily visible, but because ICANN is optionally copied on objections, we're able to provide a little bit of insight into which objections have been filed. So far, we've identified 274 objections were filed, were received. These are still pending administrative review, so they're not finalized. These are not official. We're not publishing the list. We're just trying to share the information we have on hand. Of the 274 objections, 67 objections were around string confusion, 71 around legal rights objections, 23 for limited public interest, and 113 around community. So once the dispute resolution service providers perform their administrative check, they will ensure that part of that check is to ensure that the objections comply with the AGD, and they will post those to their website. ICANN will provide formal notification to applicants and objectors with the release of a dispute announcement on April 12th. That announcement date will trigger the 30 days response window for applicants or for the objected to applicants to respond after they receive that notification. From during that 30 days, the applicants will be required to submit both their response to the objection as well as any fees for the objection. If a response is not provided, submitted to the DRSP, or if the fees are not submitted, then the objector will prevail by default. Applicants can, again, optionally copy ICANN on their responses for the dispute resolution filing. That email address is new. We've created a new email address specifically for this, drfiling@icann.org. And the next slide is on the independent objector. So the independent objector filed 24 objections with the International Chamber of Commerce on the grounds of limited public interest and on community objections as well. So you see those two lists of objections pasted here, but you can also go to the independent objectors website link provided there to see more information on these objections. And here we have a summary of the upcoming sessions to be held around the new GTLD program in Beijing. On Monday, I'll be providing a new GTLD program status update. Much of what we've covered here today, updated with 2 weeks more information, but I also anticipate talking about the upcoming future phases of work, clarifying some of the upcoming milestones and dates as we look to the next steps of the program. Then there will be, on Monday afternoon, there will be a new GTLD security, stability, and resiliency update. Jeff Moss is going to be, and others, I believe, will be presenting that session. There will be a session on the new GTLD registry agreement, the RIA, as well as the Register of Rights and Responsibilities that Cyrus and Ozzy will be leading. There will be a session on the IDN variant TLD program that Francisco Arias is presenting. On Wednesday, that's four sessions on Monday. That's going to be a busy day. And then on Wednesday, we have new GTLD pre-delegation testing process review. So, again, this is the session to help applicants prepare for pre-delegation testing that Russ Weinstein will be leading with Francisco, as well as the pre-delegation testing provider, .se, will be there as well. And then on Thursday, Trademark Clearinghouse, Karen Lentz will be leading a session to discuss all the things related to the Trademark Clearinghouse. So we are very excited. I'm excited to see all of you in Beijing. We've got a lot of information to cover, and I'm sure it's going to be a very productive meeting. I will now turn it over to Jeff Moss, who is on the line. He's going to be discussing security, stability, and resiliency.
All right. Thank you, everyone. I'm just going to give you guys a sneak peek of our session that's going to be happening on Monday in Ballroom A in Beijing, and it's on the new GTLD Security, Stability, and Resiliency update, or in ICANN speak, that's the SSR update. And this session is in the spirit of being transparent and accountable, and it will be put on by the security team, where we're going to give the attendees in Beijing an update on how we're viewing the SSR around the new GTLD program. And there's going to be essentially three focus areas. And these are areas that have been raised in the past by the community as a concern, and so we'll go through them each and describing what we see the risks to be, what we see the mitigations to be, and how we'll deal with these issues moving forward. So the first area is going to be issues around the root zone system readiness, and we'll be providing a progress report there. And so it's important to note here, when people talk about root scaling, it's really about the entire root system as a whole, not just the root servers, so the mechanisms around producing and publishing the root zone file. We're going to talk about operational readiness. So that would be different programs like IBRO or TCMH, the RESTful Whois system. And then we're going to talk about how we will deal with any unforeseen issues that arise. So on the next slide, we've received assurances from RSAC, the ICANN board, November 2015, that everybody is ready to resorb up to 1,000 new TLD delegations per year. And so everyone is pretty confident that the system delegating to the root operations is fairly well understood. But what it does is it places extra emphasis on the importance on monitoring the root servers and their behavior as new root zones are delegated in case something unforeseen happens. So we really are going to be paying a lot of attention to monitoring and behavior. And so on the next slide, what you'll see is we're talking about our root system readiness progress report. So a couple things are going on right now, and we'll be giving you updates in Beijing. One is that RSAC has a document that's gone to final comment on last Friday which is a process for documenting what measurements all root servers will gather. So it's not that root servers haven't been gathering statistics, they have, but what we're trying to do is harmonize them all, so all statistics are gathered and analyzed in the same fashion, so we get a more holistic view of what's going on in the root. ICANN has been collecting statistics to this standard or proposed standard since January 1st at LRoot, and I'm told we're going to publish our first batch of statistics as an example of what everybody can expect, and we're going to publish that by the end of this month. So the last day of March, we'll publish our first batch of statistics, and then we're also going to provide regular updates to that. Also, we're going to talk about what public reports are available to track the new TLD and other changes that it might affect root zone management and its related publication system. Okay, on the next slide, we're moving into the second area, which would be the operational readiness of various programs in the context of the security stability resiliency. So part of it is just considering the operational systems that must be in place for a successful launch. And we've narrowed them down to the TMCH, the emergency backend registry operations providers, the RESTful, who is deployment, and centralized zone access. And so we'll be talking about what we see going on in those operational programs. We're going to talk a bit about the risks that we see around them and then how they've been mitigated or are being mitigated. And then we'll have an open discussion about that. And then finally, on the next slide, some of you might have noticed we published a coordinated vulnerability disclosure document last month. And this is essentially how we plan to deal with unforeseen effects that may crop up during the new TLD program. And so what we're seeing on this slide, which is the one with all the flowcharts, I don't know, it doesn't look like we've caught up to the slide on Adobe Connect. Anyway, I'll keep talking. We published our coordinated vulnerability disclosure guidelines, and what we're going to use this for is for dealing with any unforeseen impacts. We believe that we can't know that's the right slide. So we understand that the expansion of namespace by delegating new names which were previously unroutable will most likely have unforeseen impacts. And we saw this with the SAC report 57 with internal host names. And so that SAC 57 is a perfect example of how ICANN plans to deal with unforeseen issues. And so we applied our coordinated vulnerability disclosure policy to that issue. We believe we mitigated the harm that has been caused by the internal name certificates by acting as a coordinator between the affected parties, ICANN, certificate authorities, the browser manufacturers. And we've gotten really positive feedback from the security community about this approach. So this is how we'll deal with future issues, and we can talk through that a bit in Beijing. And then finally, I believe this is my last slide, the next one. We can talk further about SAC 57, and we'll have SAC members there to discuss it and discuss how we're continuing to mitigate against the issues raised in 57. Not everything was mitigated. There's some ongoing progress that we'll be able to report in Beijing. And then we'll encourage the community and other interested parties to collaborate with the security team in helping to identify and mitigate any other unforeseen issues. So with that said, that's what we've got for you. It should be an interesting hour and a half long session, and everybody is invited. Thank you.
Now I'd like to turn it over to Saadi Shahadi, ICANN's President and CEO.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Thanks for inviting me, Christine. I thought it's a good chance prior to Beijing for me to share with you some of my thoughts on the progress with GTLD operational readiness. Let me start by, frankly, echoing Christine's excitement. This is a very good day, and it's been a good week in general for the new GTLD program. I think the release of the first, the results from the 30 first initial evaluations was very good news. And for those of you who were not here watching our team and many of the partners we had doing this work, this was a huge breakthrough in the program. Months and months of work led to really the beginning of the release of these evaluations, which frankly, as we all knew, was the one of the key steps for us to get into really the final mile, as I would call it, or the last mile towards GTLD delegation. So great news. Thank you, team. I also clearly, like many of you, was watching with interest this morning as the trademark clearinghouse opened for verification. We have hundreds of these already filed since this morning, and obviously many of us who for months were worried about the beginning of this process and whether people will participate and so on are clearly pleased and relieved that the trademark clearinghouse is open, that the process behind it with Deloitte as the first provider is working, and I really am very appreciative of the great work Deloitte, IBM, and our team have done to get this thing off and running. So important things are really coming together. And so I wanted to, frankly, as we get into that last mile, I wanted to make sure we're all on the same page and clear as to what's ahead now. So in my own sometimes simplistic way, I drew this graph today to just make sure that I and you and all of us are in sync as to the timelines and the dates ahead of us. So clearly, the basic three steps we completed today were, of course, getting these applications posted and so on. That happened in June of last year. Then we finished the prioritization with the draw completed in December, as all of you remember, that long, arduous process. That's behind us now. The initial evaluation operation is now ready and functioning. We are releasing these initial evaluation results at the pace of 30 a week. There will be another 30 this Friday and another 30 next Friday, and hopefully growing to 50 and 100 per week as we get closer to the summer, with a clear plan to get all these initial evaluations in your hands no later than August 2012. So this is all moving and moving at a very good pace. This should have said August 2013. My apologies. Now, next slide goes to the next step, which is contracting. Now, contracting can only, if we could stay on the last slide, that's fine. Just stay here. That's okay. Yeah, contracting is a process. And before that process can start, we need to have agreement on both the RA and the new form of the RA, as well as the RAA 2013. Now, by showing it here as April 23rd, this is simply a discussion that we've been having with the contracted parties. If it doesn't happen, that's fine. I had originally mentioned the date of April 23rd, I was very clear that this is our best shot, our earliest date, but this could slip. It really depends on us and the community coming together on an agreement regarding these contracts. I'm going to spend a few more minutes on the contracts because clearly in the last few weeks, these have been the subject of a lot of discussion and a lot of people are asking where the contracts are and what we're doing on them. I would like to tell you, let me start with the RA, the Registry Agreement, which many of you here are clearly focused on. I'm very pleased to tell you that we've received very good input through the public comment period on the new Registry Agreement. Very, very good input. I have analyzed with my team all this input, and in addition to that, I've been very fortunate to meet with many registries as I was traveling over the last few weeks, and I've received very good input to the registry agreement. And tomorrow, I was invited, thank you, to Jeff Newman, you were kind enough to invite me to the registry stakeholders meeting tomorrow morning, and I will be sharing with you what we've heard from the comment period, what I've heard in various meetings along my travels, and I will be making a proposal to the registries tomorrow of how the agreement will be changed and moved forward to address many of the comments we've received. But the net that I can share with you right now is that the registries have given us very good input, the community has given us very good input, and that specifically there were three areas that stood out as being problematic for the registries. One is the amendment process that was proposed. The second was the requirement that all new TLDs are sold only through registrars who have already would have executed the 2013 RAA and any subsequent RAA that is updated. And finally, the requirement that the registries pre-agree or kind of agree ahead of time to adopt the outcome of the next-gen directory services expert working group and the subsequent policy-making processes. On these three issues, ICANN will be presenting tomorrow new positions that address the community. We've heard the community. We are responsive to the community. And tomorrow, based on the input we've received, I will be presenting our solutions to these three matters in a way that I hope will be satisfactory and allow us to move forward with new agreements. In the next few days, after we present the registries with these proposed changes to address their concerns, we intend to release a new version of the registry agreement. Right now, I'm targeting to release that on Friday this week. This allows us to have a chance for all of us to see it, and if all goes well, I intend to present it to the Board of Directors in Beijing for final approval, so that this agreement would hopefully be ready for those who want to move forward with it without negotiating it as early as after Beijing. So that's the registry side. And again, tomorrow I'll be spending time with the registries to share with them where we are and to share with them what the comments have yielded. On the registrar side, we published, as you know, a version of the 2013 RAA, but at the time we published it, there were still a few areas where we and the registrars had not reached final agreement, I should say with the registrar's negotiating team, which is the team that has been in good faith sitting with us and negotiating a new version of the RAA. I'm very pleased to tell you that, first of all, this team has done a remarkable job presenting to us the concerns of the registrars. Really, truly remarkable. Open, tough, but very, very collaborative. And despite the fact that some people may think that we published the agreement on the date we did a couple of weeks ago, kind of because in desperation, that's not what we did. What we did is we were continuing to meet with the registrars. We had agreed with them, we'll continue meeting with them. But we put out the agreement, and we shared with the community how far we've gotten. And let me tell you something. How far we've gotten is remarkable. The addition to the 2013 registrar agreement that we have agreed with the negotiating team on are remarkable. It puts this agreement in a much, much, much better place. Now, we do have a few open areas. Of these, the most notable one is the same one that the registries are concerned with, and that's the ability of the board to amend the agreement. I think that as this hopefully gets resolved in a fair way in the next few days with the registries, I believe that the registrars will also be, I hope, open and pleased with the solution we're proposing to the registries, because we hope it's the same solution. And we believe that many in the contracted party community would like agreements in key areas like this to start looking more alike than not alike. So I think hopefully we solve this amendment issue in the same way. And I must be clear with all of you that on this amendment issue, I have heard both sides, and I'm very clear that there are concerns about the board using this amendment power without clear checks. I'm clear on that. And therefore, the solution we're proposing tomorrow to the registries and also to the registrars and our negotiations with them is a solution that addresses these concerns and that ensures that the board's ability to introduce an amendment is very tightly bridled, very well defined and limited in scope, so that it's only used in extreme cases and under very strict conditions. So I will present the solution in the next few days, and I think most of you will appreciate that we've been listening, appreciating the concerns. This is no longer what people have dubbed a unilateral amendment. This is an amendment that is part of a very well-defined regime that allows us to deal with unforeseen things that would come from the market, from the governing bodies of this world, from we don't know where they would come from in a market that is about to change quite drastically in the weeks and months ahead. Now, on the RAA, again, we plan to hopefully arrive to Beijing together with the negotiating team, having closed the gap on as many as the remaining points that separate us between now and Beijing. And you should know, personally, I've been meeting with the RAA negotiation team twice a week. Continue to meet them, met them yesterday, we'll meet them again this week, we'll meet them again next week. So the impression that I can through this and did not want to continue negotiating, I wish is frankly and clearly shared with you as being more, I guess, farther than reality. Reality is the RAA negotiations never stop, continue to happen in good faith and with great collaborative spirit. I'm actually deeply impressed with the representation that the registrars have had. If we continue this way, I think by Beijing we should be, and I'm hoping again here, that we should be in a position to present the community with the gaps hopefully mostly closed and with ways we're going to do that together so that we can emerge from the comment period, which ends this week, and the reply period ends on 4/19 on the RAA. We can emerge from these two periods with a clear understanding of where we are. We'll take all this input, we will put it into our thinking, and then we'll hopefully be in a position in April as well, if we keep our focus, all of us, to issue the new 2013 RAA to move forward with this other programs that affect the registrars. Lastly, I want to mention one thing about contracting. Many of you have seen that in the new RAA, we have something called the Registrant's Rights and Responsibilities Document. We effectively call it, or affectionately call it, the R3 document, the Registrant's Rights and Responsibilities. This is not quite a declaration or a bill of rights, but it's close enough to, as close enough to something like that, where we have now a document that we can share with the people around the world who say our industry is not self-governing. Show them that as a community, we have risen and established a set of rights and responsibilities to registrants, and we will live by them, and they're enforceable in a contract. And you see, if that becomes visible, and we can make this a strong document and a show of our responsibility and maturity as a self-governing industry, I think it helps us really push people who would like to do anything to government, to push them back and show them we are self-governing. And of course, the fact that this is in the RAA, and the fact that the RAA is now going to ask registries to work with people who sign the new RAA, then we have the whole industry top to bottom supporting the registrant's rights and responsibilities document. It gives us true closure end to end, and it allows us to promote that as a new step in this industry's growth. So that's the contrasting bit. The next bar that you see there, the next layer, is the pre-delegation test. My hope is that this will be in place based on what we saw from Christine earlier in May, at the latest on May 1st. So the pilot will end on April 5th. Then we will probably do some learning from that and publish more specifications to the community, but all indications are that by May 1st, the pre-delegation testing will be ready. The next slide shows the next level, and beyond pre-delegation testing, we get into delegation itself. At that point, IANA will be doing that, of course, working through its process. The preparation of IANA are underway. The enhanced RZM, we have now confirmation, will be operational on May 1st. This will really enhance their automation capabilities and process management capabilities. And we have now quite firm confirmation that by June 1st, that layer will be operationally ready. Next layer, beyond delegation, takes us into some of the things that you've been hearing from Christine about, namely the Trademark Clearinghouse. The Trademark Clearinghouse has its verification system live as of today, and many of you heard and saw that. The Sunrise and Claims, we are quite certain as of today, will be ready and operational on July 1st. These are very important dates because they start giving you a sense. When I said in Toronto that by mid-year we might be there, that you know we are building the operational readiness so that we can be there in mid-year. The next slide shows the next step in the URS. I'm happy to inform you that we have now signed the first provider. The contract is signed, and we are quite comfortable with this being also ready and operational on July 1st. Now, past these five steps, you have a number of steps that I put separately, largely because I believe that these two steps are, while critical and very important, are not steps that would necessarily stop a GTLD from being operational or in operation. So, I mean, clearly many of the GTLDs in operation today don't have anything like Ibero and don't have, SLA monitoring. Having said that, we believe these two capabilities are extremely important in the launch of the new GTLD program, so we believe they will be ready. And right now, our firm dates for these are August 1st, but I put them above a certain line because I think I wanted to simply make the point that if, for some reason, one of the GTLDs gets operational slightly before that date in July, the fact that they're operating for a month without Ibero should be okay. After all, if a new GTLD falters in the first month, we have much bigger problems to think about and to deal with. Now, I finished this slide with an extremely important point. At the bottom of all of the stack is our FSR stack. It's the security, stability, and resiliency stack. Now, Jeff Moss, prior to me speaking, covered the focus on that and covered the important update that will be taking place in Beijing, and I hope all of us who are concerned, and I hope every one of us is concerned with the security and stability, is going to be there. Let me, though, step back and say something extremely important. Nothing will trump the GTLD program progress towards delegation, nothing but the SSR layer. The SSR layer is paramount. It is our number one responsibility to the community. Nothing will be done that jeopardizes the security and stability of the DNS, period. So, we put operational dates on all the brown and blue boxes above it. But at any time, if we as a community do not believe that all relevant security and stability matters have been addressed, removed, if we do not believe that's the case, the program freezes. Period. So I want to be very, very clear on that position. There is too much riding on the DNS. Hundreds of billions of dollars of commerce. Some people may say even livelihood. We will not jeopardize that. Not under my watch. Not under this administration. So I want to be super clear on that. And therefore, the work that the community will do and continue to do now and forever to ensure that the SSR layer is always addressed and always managed well is paramount, very important, and I urge you to be part of this discussion, which has been going for years, but will continue to go, and if at any point we as a community, and certainly I as ICANN's president, get the sense that this is an issue or there is a risk that I don't feel has been fully addressed, to our satisfaction as a community, we will freeze the program. Okay? So, no, this is the one part that I put at the bottom that is so foundational, that is immovable, and that is not entirely in my hands. It's really entirely in the community's hands. However, my position here will be that there will be no compromise in this area. Okay? I want to also say one more thing about the stack before I move on to my last point. When we met in Amsterdam, if you recall, we had a pretty good discussion on the approach we take in rolling out this program. And we talked about the agile development approach versus the more traditional waterfall kind of approach. And we discussed that given where we are, the best way forward, as is agreed even across the board globally on how software and systems are built today, an agile approach is the right approach. And so we could say, why don't we stop everything until all the stacks in brown and blue are done? And once they're all brown, like the three completed ones at the bottom, then we could start planning the program. Or we can say, let's proceed in an agile way and start building these pieces as we go. So, for example, even if Ibero is not done today, we can proceed with a bunch of things below it and have a very carefully deployed program so by the time we get there, all the pieces are in place. That's the approach we're taking. And that's an approach I'm personally very familiar with. I've built major systems, major companies using that approach, so we are comfortable with that approach. And we have a superb team of people here now that understand the agile program management approach, and that's what we're using. Now, having said all of this, I want to say that again. Agile does not mean we get agile or easygoing on the SSR layer. This is the one layer that should never be touched, compromised. Everything else can be as we go, and we'll be smart about how we do this and how we build it in an agile fashion, not security and stability. And let's be clear that even if some people may look at the slide and say, well, wait a second, you're going to delegate in UTLD before the TMCH is done? Well, let me be very clear. The contract for the new TLD registry says very clearly that you cannot make your TLD operational until you have gone through a full deployment of the Trademark Clearinghouse. So the contract already binds to why we might tell you you're delegated. You cannot go operational until you are into the TMCH, linked into it, Sunrise, all the pieces that you need to do. So in reality, according to this high-level picture, and of course Christine will have a very, very detailed Gantt chart and all the details behind that in Beijing that you can see. But at my stupid management level, with this slide, I can tell you right now we are looking at July as the earliest time before people are actually operational with their GTLD. Now, we will be ready with these dates as we go to get there, but given the pieces that are still ahead of us, it seems to me at this point that July is the earliest time a GTLD and UTLD can actually be operational. Again, for the third and last time, only assuming that our security and stability team and community have addressed all relevant concerns. Okay, I finished by giving you an announcement, an important announcement. We, on the 23rd of April, will be holding an important event in New York City. On the afternoon of that day, we plan to have a press conference, and that press conference will be to frankly start telling the world about two things. First, that the new GTLD program is here. It's good for the world. That's what it does to communities, to businesses, to industries, to economies. Secondly, we will tell them that ICANN and its community remain immensely focused on the public interest, and we will feature the R3 document and what it means. And thirdly, and that thirdly is going to be dependent on whether we can get contracting where we need it to be, and if we don't, then we will skip that third part. But if we are in good shape in the contracts, we intend to have a third component to the press conference where we will announce the new contracts, which make this industry more ready for the scale and responsibility that comes with the new DNS growth. And if we're there, we will have many of the CEOs of our contracted parties actually signing their new agreements on that date. So I'm just giving you a sense. The attendance to that event can be physical, or we will have it virtually open and available live for everybody to participate in globally. We will be sending an announcement about that shortly. We're very excited about this. We have many of the new TLD applicants. We're selecting a cross-section of them and inviting them to present. Mayor Bloomberg is coming. We have representatives from governments coming to watch this industry also embrace the R3 and the responsibilities. Representatives from the U.S. government, European governments, other governments have been invited. So that event will be announced shortly, and I hope many of you will participate and join us on this exciting new day. It's a day where we're showing the world we're moving forward and we're building the right industry and the right regime to make sure this industry meets its obligations. So I'm going to hand it back to Michelle. And this way we have 25 minutes of open discussion to answer your questions. And thank you again for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you so much, Fadi, and thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Christine. We're going to get the numbers for you to dial into back up on the screen. And if you want to dial in via the phone, hit star 1 to get into the queue, star 2 to drop out. Phone questions will be given priority. You can also ask your questions via the questions and comments box on Adobe Connect. Thank you.
And at this time, we have a question in the queue from the line of Reg Levy from Minds and Machines. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I have a question about the Trademark Clearinghouse, which allows 50 additional words that have been previously adjudicated to be infringing to be included now. And I wanted to verify whether or not that was 50 per unique mark or 50 per trademark. So, for example, a company like ICANN is going to have a trademark on iPad in multiple jurisdictions, say 30 jurisdictions. So are they going to get 50 additional words, or are they going to get 1,500 if they register every single trademark in every jurisdiction for the word iPad?
I'm going to ask Karen Lentz, who is the resident expert of the Trademark Clearinghouse, to address that question.
Okay, thanks for the question. So I understand it to relate to the straw man proposal and the element where up to 50 additional domain names can be added to an existing clearinghouse record based on UDRP or other process which has found it to be abused. The 50 is up to 50 domain name labels per trademark record. So it's got to be an existing trademark record that's already been verified by the clearinghouse, and the proceeding would need to have referenced that specific trademark and shown that those domain names were abused based on that set of rights.
Okay, but again, a trademark record, is that going to be a unique mark? Because, again, a lot of companies are going to have trademarks on the same mark in multiple jurisdictions, and they may want to put all of them into the Trademark Clearinghouse, as that would be creating different records, correct?
Correct. So if you have one trademark in one jurisdiction is one record.
Okay. So a company that has 30 trademarks in different jurisdictions is going to get to have 150 previously adjudicated abusive names reserved.
If there are that many and they can be tied to those specific trademarks in those jurisdictions matching the records, then yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Ruben's call from Nick.bar. Please go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. My question is about the security and stability review of the current new GLT applicant. Although security and stability is paramount, we still don't have the results of the security and stability names panel, and we have at least two names where there was concrete data pointing to security issues, which was both .home and .court. Data from root servers, data from certificate authorities, and we still don't have news on this one. When it's foreseen that is this panel will release its results. Thank you.
So yes, the DNS stability panel has been performing evaluation work, and not all of those results are published yet. We've only released evaluation results on the first 27 of the first 30 applications. So additional results of evaluation will be forthcoming in upcoming weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Michael Plague from Veros Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Mike Plague. Christine, I have a question with regard to the timing. For those applicants that have passed initial evaluation but still have only received 1 point in connection with their letter of credit, so there still seems to be outstanding issues, is there anything that applicant can do to expedite resolving that letter of credit issue prior to April 15th? Because if they only get the opportunity to resolve that on April 15th, that may not entitle them to participate in the April 23rd event. So where would that person go? Is that evaluators, ICANN Legal, or where in the red tape process do they go to try to resolve their letter of credit issue?
So, Michael, I understand the question. In general, I would encourage applicants to address these issues through the contracting process, and that would be the stage of which we will be reviewing and verifying any existing letters of credit over time. For the first, the timing issue that you're bringing up pertaining to moving towards the April 23rd date is a good one. Could I ask you to submit that question via the CSC, and we can follow up with that issue individually and offline. But the question will be to address these issues during the contracting phase. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, and our next question comes from the line of Jeff Newman from Newstar. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, Jeff, thanks.
Great. Okay, I put some questions in the comment box, but given the timing, I thought I'd call in. So I just want to ask a couple follow-ups on the Trademark Clearinghouse. And the first one is, we have the July 1st date, which seems pretty far out, but do we have dates when the systems will be available for testing is my first question, and how long will that period be? Second question is, you had said that there'll be non-technical requirements for Specification 7. Does that mean additional legal terms and conditions, and is that going to be floated by the community, or is that just something we all have to kind of accept? And then third question on the clearinghouse is on the fees. What are the fees? What's the contract with IBM, and if we can go over that, and if you don't have it today, when will those be available? Thanks.
So I think we've got a few different questions. One is the July 1st, June 30th date, and the testing around that, the specific details of the non-technical document, and then the contract and the fees, financials associated with that. Karen, can I ask you to address any or all of those issues that you'd like?
Thanks, Christine. So I'll just comment on the RPM requirements that we're planning to publish this week. So that is, as Christine said, referenced in Spec 7, that there will be a place where all of the requirements related to Sunrise and claims are available. I think that most of it is already known. The Sunrise needs to be 30 days, et cetera, but it's attempting to put some more specificity and clarity on that. We've incorporated a number of questions that we've gotten through the CSC, for example, about how registries can, put special periods or special requirements in their Sunrises. So it's really an attempt to compile all of that so that the minimum requirements are clear. What we'll publish this week is a draft version of that with the intention that we will discuss it during the clearinghouse session in Beijing and get feedback on questions or issues that need more consideration or clarification so that we can take that back and update it after the meeting. Thanks.
So can I just, as a follow-up, just ask, is there going to be an agreement that needs to be signed by the registries and the registrars with the clearinghouse with additional legal terms and conditions, indemnities, fees, payment of fees, all that kind of stuff? If the answer is yes, because I think you said in previous webinars there would be, what's the plan for that rollout and discussion?
Hi, Jeff. This is Akram. Regarding the trademark clearinghouse operations on the Sunrise and Claims side of the program, we've actually, if you remember, we were presenting, or IBM presented a goal of about 10,000 euros or $10,000 per TLD as a fee. And we, during the negotiations, we went back and forth with them, and in order to reduce the fees, we took on some of those aspects. Given that all of the registries and the registrars have already contracted with ICANN, we have a contractual relationship, we determined that we could reduce the fees substantially, but if we took on that ourselves. And therefore, we negotiated with IBM a fee of $5,000 per TLD, and we took on the invoicing and collection and providing the TLD with the access information to the clearinghouse, therefore reducing a lot of the administrative costs that IBM would have to bear. And I think that would have that's a win-win situation for IBM, and for the registries and registrars, and we end up doing some more work, but you know, that's what we're here for. So I hope that answers both of your questions and leaves you on a good note.
Yeah, no, thanks. And I appreciate the information. So you're saying it's $5,000 per TLD. Is that a one-time payment, or is that per year? And then, so what you're saying then is there's no transactional fee, it's just a one-time, or it's just a $5,000 flat fee.
Yeah, so let me break it down a little bit more. For the registry side, it's a one-time fee for $5,000. Every successful registration that is in the trademark clearinghouse will bear a 30-cent fee. The registrars, because we want to maintain the trademark clearinghouse over a long period of time, when maybe the majority of the registrations will happen the majority of the TLDs will go live in the first 2 years, we wanted to maintain it for 5 years. We decided that ICANN would pay IBM $400,000 a year for the 5 years, therefore keeping the TMCH up for 5 years and cover all of the registrar costs. So given that a lot of the registries will register also as registrars, and the existing registrars and the amount of work that would take to, you know, the fees and the amount of work it would take to get all of these access to the trademark clearinghouse, we decided that if we pay a flat fee and let all the registrars have access to that, would be the best way for everybody as well. So the total cost for the registries and registrars would be $5,000 for each TLD one time, and then 30 cents per successful registration, and then ICANN would pay $400,000 a year for 5 years to keep the TMCH up and running, and then provide free access to all the registrars. Is that enough color? And we will be posting this agreement, or at least the terms of the agreement, for public review shortly.
Sorry, that's great. Great information. That's appreciate the detail. Just to follow up, you said 30 cents per registration. Is that registration during the sunrise period, or registration for every registry? And I'm assuming that's a one-time fee, not an annual.
Yeah, this is a one-time fee during the sunrise and claims period.
Oh, during sunrise and claims.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks. I don't want to hog up the phone, so thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Amidou Abro. Please go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me? Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks a lot. I wanted to ask some of the questions that have already been asked, but in order to make that short, I have a number of requests to the staff for the short period coming right now. We have some applications already passed their initial evaluation. We are very close to contractual negotiation. For example, Christine said, if you want to negotiate the agreement, quite frankly, it would help if I could say which parts of the agreement are negotiable, because I don't want to make easy jokes, but our impression is that that's more contractual acceptance than contractual negotiation. And perhaps that's fair, but we are not sure what do you exactly mean by contractual negotiation, or which areas could be. I mean, for instance, may I negotiate not to have a public quiz? I don't think so, right? I don't think that is even on the table. So a clarification on that would be helpful in the next weeks. Another thing that would be, I have a special request for Karen or other parts of the staff, is that you should try to organize something in Beijing with the tribal clearing house and the first registered are in the line, because we are trying to contact with them and we have just tickets from them, and we need you know, someone that helps us to explain how to organize a sandwich with them. If we are, you know, you have, for instance, number 6 and 9 in the ticket, or 70, or maybe other people in the 20, and there is an absolute lack of communication so far, and at this point of time, this is probably too late for this. And the same for general on sandwiches. Quite frankly, we've been discussing that with GeoTLDs, with community TLDs, with open registration TLDs, and there's a lot of confusion on what's acceptable, it's not acceptable, what's good, it's not good, regarding sunrise. And I think that in Beijing we should have a session dedicated on that, lunch period in general, not just the tribal clearing house, but precisely what the other things that go maybe around the tribal clearing house sunrise for trademarks period. There are other things there, and not everybody has clear ideas. Up to now, the standard answer we got from the staff was, we cannot discuss individual applications. The problem is that now we have to launch TLDs, and probably not making lots of mistakes from the very beginning would be helpful. And now, discussing publicly what's acceptable or not, what kind of things in a sunrise are good ideas or not, are things that the registers and registrars want to do or not, and doing that all together in Beijing would be a very good idea. And the last question is regarding pre-delegation. And that's a concrete question on, you know, what kind of things beyond these tests are checked? For instance, hardware. We all described our hardware and where our DNS servers were located. But, you know, 1 year later, this thing has changed. Because, you know, there is evolution, there is new hardware, there is obsolete hardware. We have added facilities even for, you know, who is wherever. Now, the question is the kind of hardware or the exact location of a DNS server something that will be checked or not? And once again, with the documentation we have, we don't have clear ideas about what's being checked. Thanks.
Amadeo, thank you very much for that input. I think we'll go a long way to answer those questions. You know, I would encourage and decide to on contracting, as well as the session on the trademark clearing to get the process, and then to participate in the pre-delegation testing session. You can explore the details of the testing requirements. Those will be discussed during that session. So thank you very much for the request.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Ken Stubbs from Affulus. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I've got a question and a comment. The first question I have is, I'm somewhat befuddled because we're talking about putting an event on April the 23rd, yet we've heard that, for all intents and purposes, the go-live date, the earliest go-live date, will be July 1st. So it's kind of like having a party 2.5 months in advance of where the real rubber meets the road. The second question is more of a comment. I listened to Fadi's discussion of how he plans to move forward with the proposal he's going to be giving the registries tomorrow. And I'm having trouble understanding when we're talking about presenting this proposal to the board, and will the community, especially the affected parties, have the opportunity for input in helping to possibly take a close look at the proposal. There may be some issues that we would like to discuss and bring before you, and I'm somewhat confused about that process because I did not know that the ICANN board actually acted or even met during the meetings anymore. They, I believe, meet before a meeting, and then they delay for 2 weeks after these meetings. So could we get a little clarification there, please?
Yeah, Ken, this is Fadi. Thank you very much for your input. Let me just focus for a moment on the registry agreement. We have received tens of very substantive comments on that agreement. The community has been very active, and I'm very, very pleased with the quality of the comments we received, and we're analyzing them and reviewing them, and by the end of today, I will have an analysis that I can share with the affected parties tomorrow at a new regular meeting that occurs, I think, every other week or something. But this is what we're doing, precisely. We're spending time with the community. We took all the comments. The comment period is now closed. We will analyze them. We'll share with you the outcome. I already have shared with you that based on the input we've received, I am already sharing with you that I'm prepared to step back on some of the more contentious areas that I mentioned to you, the three areas. And I think we will be presenting the registries tomorrow with what I hope will be received as very good solutions to these matters. Of course, I will get feedback from the registries tomorrow and the days ahead. We will share with them a new revision of the contract based on all this input. We will have a chance to listen more, myself and the board, to the registries in Beijing, and we will present. The board meets during the Beijing meeting, and they also meet after the Beijing meeting. So we will use all that time to collect all the input we can, and then be able, I hope, to have the board approve these right after the Beijing meeting, after all the input has been collected. So that's my stance. As to parking, I mean, I frankly, I'm one that wants to party all the time. So I hope you would join me. I think we're not parking to announce that the first GTLD was released, but we're starting, I think, to build the positive momentum about why these GTLDs make a difference to the world. What is their value for the public? What is their value to economies? What is their value to societies? For too long, the public discourse about new GTLDs, I hope you would agree with me, has not always been most flat. The focus has been on protections, on risks. We're trying to turn the tide. And to start there, as the new GTLDs later this year, in the second half of this year and next year, hopefully, assuming everything is in check, are starting to roll, I'm hoping that we can turn the tide on the debate. And again, I've canceled parties before. We may all decide that we don't have enough substance to the party, but right now, as it stands, I believe the momentum is fantastic. The communications with the contracted parties have been superb. The feedback has been very helpful. And assuming I am comfortable with the SSR update, as you are, all of you, after Beijing, I think we will start seeing some movement in the right direction. So that's my sense of where we are on these things. I hope this was helpful, Ken.
Thank you, Fadi.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Robin Gross from NCSG. Please go ahead.
All right, I don't have a question.
Thank you. And one moment, please. Our next question comes from the line of Yasmin Omir from ARI. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kristen. Can you please confirm that the new requirement to predict abuse names from the scoreman will have no impact on the technical specifications published for the TMCH? So, as an example, will there be two notices that will be provided? Thanks.
Yasmin, I'm sorry. I think the connection is poor. I couldn't understand the question.
Sorry, I'll repeat that then. Can you please confirm that the new requirement to protect abuse names from the straw man will have no impact on the technical specifications published for the TMCH? So, for example, will there be two notices? And I also had another question on the IANA delegation process and when we would have access to more information regarding that from a registry point of view. Thanks. Did you get that, Christine?
So if I understood you correctly, Yasmin, I think the first question was the impact of the straw man on the TMCH plans and rollout. And the second was a general question about IANA delegation process.
If I could just clarify, not just the straw man, but specifically the requirement to protect abused names, so the 50 abused names that will be associated with every trademark clearinghouse record. And I wanted to know whether that would have an impact on the technical specifications that were published for the TMCH. So, for example, whether or not there would be two notices that would have to be provided. I'm hoping it's just a confirmation that there is no impact.
I'm going to ask Kevin Lentz to address the TMCH question.
Okay, thank you, Christine. So there are a few elements of the straw man proposal that we will be implementing, and I'll address each of those. In terms of the impact, the first was the requirement for 30 days notice before a sunrise period. Not really a technical impact there. It's just a new requirement to provide advance information. Second is the extension of the claims period to 90 days. So, again, not a difference in the technical specifications there, except that the service goes on for a longer period of time. With regard to the addition of previously abused names to a record, there shouldn't really be a separate process required for this. For example, when labels are associated with a trademark record now, those labels are part of the SMD or signed mark data file that's used in Sunrise, so those names would just be incorporated in that file, and no additional process should be necessary on the other end. The same is true. I spoke incorrectly because the previously abused names don't actually go into the Sunrise. They're only added for purposes of claims. So just to clarify that. So in terms of the claims process, notice is generated based on, one, a query by the registry to all the domain labels that are covered by a claim. And then, two, the registrar is querying the database to get the claims information for that specific label. So, again, there shouldn't really need to be an additional process here. The labels in question would simply become part of the list of labels that's subject to a claim, and from the registry and registrar perspective, that process would proceed the same as with any other name that's subject to a claim. Thanks.
Right, that's exact confirmation we're after. Thank you.
And Yasmin, this is Christine. I would encourage you to, if you are able to participate in Beijing, at least Derek and the IANA team will be there and will be able to address any concerns about the questions about the IANA delegation process. So on that note, I'm going to wrap up the call. We are already 7 minutes over time. today. Thank you all for your participation. I want to acknowledge that we received probably a couple of dozen questions via the Q&A pod that we weren't able to get to today. As we did with the last webinar, I'm going to ask my team to put those questions and answers into a Q&A, FAQ-type document, and we will publish that before Beijing to address these questions and clarify some of the issues out there. I want to end by letting you know I think all of us here at ICANN and on the new GTLD team feel very positive about the progress going forward, that we've passed several very critical milestones, and we are on firm footing as we move forward. So we look forward to seeing you all in Beijing, and thank you so much. Safe travels,